This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hunting boots are a critical component of any successful hunt. Whether walking a short distance to your blind or trudging miles through rugged terrain, your feet are carrying the load. Without the right boots, you could give up early and lose out on that trophy just over the ridge. At Midway USA, we make selecting boots for your next hunt easier. With just a few clicks of a mouse, you can decide on what's important, like waterproofing, insulation, size, width, and savings. For just about everything for shooting, hunting, and the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Welcome to the Whitetail Legacy Podcast. Another week, another episode. I got the boys jumping in the background on this intro if you hear anything. This week, got a real cool Whitetail BS session. Coming from my buddy out in the east. He also kills bucks all over, though. Guy's an absolute slayer of deer. Had him on the podcast a couple years ago and reached out again, was talking to him, and I was like, you know what? Let's have him on again. Good buddy Trey Pritchard. Guy's killed a nice buck multiple different states for 7 years in a row now. Like I said, really good, solid bucks, a couple badass, non-typical deer. But we have a good whitetail BS session, talking about his success and why he thinks he's had it. But we also get into kind of the way he's going about hunting in the future and this year. And just a good BS session to kind of get you thinking about whitetail hunting. Going into motivation for late season, because you need it out there. It's cold as shit, I know. And some motivation for next year. Getting to the people that make this possible, Exodus Outdoor Gear. You guys know the thing. Had the call with them again. Still some cool stuff coming out for 2024. If you guys are looking to get into a rival, it's a great time to do that. You can use my code WL. I want to thank everybody that used that code this year. Huge support shown by you guys. One thing that I want to mention that I don't mention a lot that I actually utilized this year is their booster antenna. So if you got an area that you're wanting to get a cell cam in and you ain't got real good service and you're kind of struggling and you're getting frustrated because you're trying this brand or trying that brand, they sell some booster antennas that work awesome. And they get it up a little bit higher and they get a little bit better signal. And just get enough to make that camera work flawlessly, because we know how important that signal is for those cell cams to work, to send those pictures, to get those updates. So they do have that on their website, and you can use the code WL there, save you some money on that as well. And if you guys have any, I got some messages about Exodus this week and had some good conversations with some guys struggling with some other trail cam companies. If you have any questions about Exodus, don't be afraid to reach out. I'd love to chat with you guys. I'm not going to downplay any other brand. A lot of other brands, I haven't worked with their mobile cams or their reg cams a lot, so I don't know, and I can't downplay them. The only thing I can do is talk about what I've had going on with Exodus. So if you've been interested in the product and you kind of been thinking about it and haven't pulled the check out and wrote it for some new cams, and you're in the market. I know that the tax season's coming, and that's when you get a little excess hunting fund if you're anything like me. And you, if you're looking to get some Exodus cams, reach out. I'll go over everything, and you can make sure it's a right fit before you make that big purchase on all those cams. Rec Broadheads, code is still live there with Rec, WLP15, save you 15%. You can support a badass broadhead company, support Matt and his dad. And it sounds like they got a new broadhead coming out. They're kind of teasing a little bit. You know, it's time of the year. ATA is coming up. They're kind of teasing a little bit, and they've had some success with it, done some videos with it this year. So interesting to see what they got coming out next year. And just another product that I can throw at you guys to maybe reach your needs and save you some money for listening to the show. Next but not least, you guys know, if you're in the market for a thermal, reach out. I got that code from Dark Knight Outdoors, save you $50. If you're looking for a thermal, you've seen how expensive they are. If you haven't coyote thermal hunted, my God, it's so fun. It's like a video game. It's so nuts, cool. The deer, the coyotes act so different at night. It's so cool to be able to do that with a thermal. But if you don't have one, it's something you can't do. But you can change that with Dark Knight Outdoors. Reach out. I'll give you that code. Be able to save you $50. And the last is the call out of the week. Now, this is a little bit different call out. It's something that I do with my kids and my wife. And it's cool. It's fun. It's something simple, funny, pass the time while you're driving. So we call it the Would You Rather game. So basically, when you're driving next time with your wife or your kids, a girlfriend, a mom, whatever it is, turn your radio off, put down your phone, and play the Would You Rather game. So a Would You Rather game would you rather have to eat cereal all year or muffins all year? Like, it could be as silly as, would you rather be a bird or a deer? Would you rather do this or that? And you have to tell them why. They have to say why they would want to do it or why they would not want to do it. It gets you to know your kids a little bit better and your wife a little bit better. And a lot of times the questions get pretty deep, and it's really fun to let your kids ask you questions, because a lot of times their stuff is off the wall. My kid said, would you rather sleep on bubblegum for a year or sleep on what the heck is that stuff? That real nasty stuff that they buy, slime, the slime. Would you rather sleep on bubblegum bed or a slime bed for a year? And I had to think on that for a while. That's a big commitment, a year long. But something really fun you can do with your kids or your wife. Make it as serious or as funny as you want, and really enjoy that time in a car where a lot of times maybe kids want an iPad or you're talking, you know, you're listening to the radio, your wife's talking on the phone, texting. Something you can bring your family together in that moment and just have a little fun. And your kids are going to remember that. And you might be able to ask some questions to your wife that maybe, you know, get to know her a little bit better. So that's the call out for the week. If you do it and you want a little bit of accountability, reach out to me. Let me know how it went. I would love that. I do have 3 accountability groups set up as we speak right now. If you want some more information on that, that's something that I've been doing. That's been incredible. I've been loving it. And the guys in those groups have really been impacting each other, which I really like to see. Such a cool thing to see guys supporting other guys that they don't even know and wanting to see them do good and building that relationship over time and making friends from different states and you know, asking them questions about how their week went and stuff. It's just so cool to see that. And there's a lot of good dudes out there that are doing that. So if that's something you'd be interested in, reach out, Instagram, Facebook, message me straight up, email. I'll get back with you. Like always, I appreciate you guys listening to the show, and let's get into it. All right, we got Trey Pritchard on tonight. How's it going, brother?
Good, man. How are you?
Doing good. I had you on quite a while ago. I can't remember how long it was ago. Do you remember how long ago we had you on?
It was 2 years.
Yeah, two years ago. Or so. I mean, and we got to talking, and you're still continually killing bucks year after year, and I'm following along, and I thought it would be better to have a chat of, you know, how's this guy killing for 7-8 years consistently, multiple different states, and they're all really solid bucks. So I wanted to have you on again and chat with that. But before we get in too deep with that, do a short introduction of who you are and what you do.
Yeah, my name is Trey Pritchard. I am from Central Pennsylvania. I work in the pharmaceutical industry, so I drive a lot, listen to a lot of podcasts, and pretty much whitetails year-round for me right now. I'm trying to expand a little bit into some other stuff, some mule deer, some western stuff, but whitetails pretty much consumes my life 24/7.
Yeah, you killed a slammer mule deer, didn't you, this year?
Last year I killed an antelope.
Oh yeah, that's right. Antelope, yep. Man, killer. Going out west, my buddy keeps trying to get me to go out there, Garrett, and I'm just like, man, I want to. Time is a factor right now because I got so many damn kids, but I feel like if I go out there and get into some spot and stock stuff, I'll get hooked, man. I just feel like that's where it is. That kind of style of hunting is just so cool to me. It's something that I haven't done a lot of, you know?
Dude, last year was the first year, the year that I killed the mule deer. It's the first year that I went out west to hunt. And I really went out with, like, no expectations. And when we got home, I literally went on our company's website and started looking to see if there were job openings, like, out west. So I was like, I'll transfer right now.
I'll do it right now. That's how I feel like I would be, too. I'm like, man, they just so many more species to hunt, so many more seasons, you know, and you get tags for all of them. And it's just every one of them is a little bit different but similar, you know. Just so cool that they have so much you can do.
Yeah, and it's cool, but at the same time, I think after a year, I'd be like, I miss my whitetail.
Yeah, I know. There's something about whitetail hunting that just does it for me. Everybody's like, you turkey hunt? I'm like, yeah, I turkey hunt.
Yeah, I do.
I kill turkeys almost every year, but it's just like, man, I'm not even close. And some people are like obsessed with it. It's way better than deer hunting. I'm like, not even on the same spectrum for me, dude. That mythical whitetail is what I'm chasing out there.
Well, like, I'll listen to, like, whitetail podcasts, like, furthest possible point from the season and be hooked on it. Like, you won't catch me listening to, like, a turkey podcast in, like, December.
Yeah, no.
November.
No, yeah. Like, no one's game planning for turkeys right now, unless maybe they're buying out-of-state tags or something, you know. But
no, there's just something magical about whitetails, man.
I think it's like, you know, some people say, like, oh, I passed this turkey for 2 or 3 years, you know, and I've been hunting them, you know, but there's really no storyline to a turkey. You're like, oh, it's a tom. This nice
called
beard.
Called him in, shot him.
Boom. You know, like, there's not a lot to it. There's not that build up. You know, oh, maybe you found his sheds or you think you found his bedding area, found some rubs or scrape, you know, is this him? You're not out there like, oh, this is a roosting tree. This is probably where he's at, you know. I mean, maybe some guys are, but I'm not. You know, I'm going out there and hitting the old, whoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Oh, they're over there, boys. Let's go, you know.
And there is something fun. Like, the first week, you know, like, the first gobble you hear of the year.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
But after a week of it, I'm like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah, I mean, I kill a bird. I'm like, cool. Yeah, okay, I'm cool. Like, I like going with people and maybe filming or just hunting to get the experience. But killing really is like, I could care less, but for deer, like, oh, like, yeah, let me be the trigger guy. I'm in on that, yep. You know, but like, I would film turkeys all spring and be cool with it just because it's just, I'm like, yeah, you know, I grew up in Missouri, really healthy turkey population and just murk turkeys, you know, like we had farm tags and, you know, every single year I'd kill some, my step grandpa would kill some, you know, all my friends were killing turkey. It wasn't like, but if you killed like a 130 down there, people were like, holy shit, like this guy's got something going on, you know. But you kill a turkey, they're like, oh, cool, you know. But just wasn't
it was hard over. It was hard this year for us. Like, our turkey population in Pennsylvania has just bombed. So it was hard getting into it this year because, like, we just didn't have birds to the point where the Game Commission put out something that said, like, if you see a flock of turkeys, call and report where it is.
Wow.
So, like, it was hard. Like, usually, like, a week or two before season, you're driving around, you're seeing birds strutting in the field, you're getting excited for that first week. When you don't see birds out, like, it was hard to get excited for this year.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than going out, you're up early, you're like, oh, it's going to be a good morning, then you hear no gobbles. You're like, what in the hell? And you're like, I can hear a long ways, you know, like, there's no birds anywhere out here.
You know? Tell who's a call, and it's one of those where, like, if I was a turkey, I'd hammer that.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just nothing.
Yeah. And then you're like, you hear something that's probably an owl, but you're like, oh, is that a gobble? Like, I'm not real sure. You know? You're like, that's
kind of. You're convincing yourself.
Kind of sound like a gobble. Maybe there's one way over there. And, you know, and then you walk all the way over there and ain't shit over there. But yeah, I've, my turkey ground that used to be good, I don't know what happened. The neighbors logged, and I don't know if that kind of drawed them that way, but they're in the fall heavy. But the spring, they're not there. They're just not there anymore. The honey population is kind of high. I killed some birds off of it, so, you know, I didn't help the population at all. But I got a buddy, I got a spot down south of a buddy of mine's, and it's just, it's insane. There's
money.
No, it's just so many birds. It's such a big farm, and he leases it just for turkeys. Can't deer hunt lease it. If we could, my God, that'd be fabulous. But it's huge, huge acreage that he just turkey leases. Mike from Harvest Time Outdoor come up, and I went, and we all killed birds. So it's a slammer piece. I killed mine first weekend, which is kind of a harder weekend in Illinois because they're kind of grouped up and not real fired up yet, and it's cold. And but I was able to kill it first set, first 35 minutes of daylight, you know. So,
dude, how did we get so deep into turkey talk?
I don't know.
As
I don't
we're
know.
Talking about not being into turkey.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's how it happens on my show. Shit just goes off the chain. Most people are like, you got like a list or stuff you want to send me? I'm like, I can if you want. I have an idea in my head of how I want the show to go. Other than that, it just kind of goes on its own at this point. There's no.
We're just winging it.
Yeah, there's no kind of guideline for how it goes. But getting back into the whitetail talk, I've been following you, like I said, over the years, and every single year you're killing in multiple different states, and you're killing really high class bucks. So you got to be doing something. I know you're living out in Pennsylvania, which out there, you know, everybody's like, oh, we got really high hunter population. It's hard to find bucks, etc. You're killing there. You're also traveling and killing. So I know you're doing some things different than most guys. But if you could just kind of give a brief rundown of the bucks you killed and what states, kind of as, you know, as brief or as long as you want to take it, just kind of give the listeners an idea of what you've done over the last 7-8 years.
Yeah. So if you can remember them all. I think I've killed bucks in multiple states the last 5 years. So I'm 26 now. So I think the last 5 years I've killed in multiple states. Usually I'll kill in Pennsylvania and then Maryland, Delaware, Ohio, and then we'll usually do a Midwest trip to Iowa, Illinois. Obviously Iowa's getting tougher. And then if you include like mule deer and the antelope out west, but bread and butter is really Pennsylvania, Maryland, Ohio, Illinois. So the last couple years, really my bread and butter has been, I've gotten the opportunity to kill early in Pennsylvania, and then I've just had the time to be able to travel other places. This year was a little bit different, to be honest. Usually I'm like trail cam junkie, try to find a buck, try to pattern him, you know, do all the stuff you learn on tactics and, you know, all that stuff. This year was different. Like I went through some different stuff with health and work and time. And I didn't run that many trail cameras. I didn't scout as much as I want. And I went into this season kind of prepared soup. Like I went in feeling like I'm not ready for this grind. And I killed opening weekend in Pennsylvania. So it was one of those where, like, most recent intel, one of the people that gives me permission to hunt, it's literally 5 acres, more suburban, and they have, it's basically a big dried creek bed. And up on the top, there's a bunch of white oaks, red oaks, and they were having deer that were working up this dried creek bed and hitting the acorns. So they actually called me Saturday morning. I couldn't hunt on our opening morning. And they called me and told me about this quote unquote big buck. and I didn't have any intel anywhere else. So I was like, you know what? We're just going to hang it on it. There's a creek down in the bottom. It's hot. You know, maybe I'll catch deer coming off the bedding, basically staging in these oaks, working down to the creek, trying to stay cool. And first hanging hunt of the year in Pennsylvania, I had this buck come in, and he's a mainframe eight with split brows and split twos, and came into 25 yards, made a great shot. And I called my best friend, and I was like, he's like, no, there's no way you killed again. And I was like, dude, I don't know what just happened, but you got to get over here. And he's like, well, how big was it? I was like, I have no idea. I've never seen this deer before. And that's like the first time in a couple years that I've killed a buck that I haven't had pictures of, that I haven't had history with. And
kind of cool,
man. It was refreshing, to be honest. Yeah. Like going out with no expectations, no cameras. It was just cool. And if you look at the bucks that I've killed in years past, score wise, he's not what some of those bucks were. Not having history, not having expectations, like I didn't care whatsoever. I saw that deer, and my heart rate went through the roof. And I was like, "Yep, you're dead."
Yeah, because you don't, when you don't know what buck it is, you don't know if it's a shooter or not. So a lot of times you're like, in that moment, you're trying to decide like, okay, shooter, not shooter, shooter. And just that little bit of, like for me, I always seem to fall on the killers, like I'm killing him. Like if he's edging like that, if I'm not like right away shooter and it's like edging, most of the time he's getting shot at, you know? Like, so.
Well, and learn from this year is like there's different kinds of fun when it comes to hunting. Like 2 years ago when we did a podcast on that freak that I killed in PA, like I ran so many cameras on that deer. Every single day after work I was doing something to try to get on him, figure out his pattern, catch up with him, and that was like a stressful fun, and when it came together it was worth it. But there were a lot of deer that I passed on that year chasing that buck that, like, I would have been stoked with. Mm-hmm. I passed because I knew what was around. Like, this was a different – it was almost like a stress-free, I have no idea what's around.
Just
I felt unprepared. And you know what? If it got my heart racing, I'm shooting him.
Yeah, that was like this year. One of my main farms that – like a lot of my shooters were on last year that never showed up. I took my boy out there youth season, and in my mind I had picked up some new places, so I was trying to utilize, you know, cell cams or reg cams in spots where I didn't know what was gonna happen. So I didn't know what was out there on that farm. I took my boy youth hunting out there, and I seen some ground scrapes that were open and fresh, and I was like, okay. You know, that's 1st of October, that youth season, first week there. And we end up not having any success youth season. We've seen some deer, but I don't let him shoot more than, you know, 50, 60 yards. He's real young. He shot a doe high, and we didn't recover it this year with the crossbow. But anyways, I went out there, and I hadn't run cams on that farm. And it was raining in October, or, you know, it was second week of October. It was raining first of the second week, you know, raining pretty hard. And I was like, I'm going to go hunt those scrapes. You know, rain's supposed to stop. Traditional October time frame, perfect scenario kind of deal. And a buck came out and hit both those scrapes. As that buck came out, I'm like, oh, that's Frank. You know, that's like a six-year-old deer, five and a half, six-year-old deer. I had pictures of him last year. He had busted his G2 off, and he was a little bit smaller than last year. Kind of the same frame, but a little smaller. I was like, man, five and a half, 6.5 year old deer, I probably should kill that deer. But I wasn't running cams, so I was thinking, oh man, there's so many other bucks out here. But this year, that was the biggest deer that's on that farm. And I passed him second week of October at 12 yards, hitting a scrape. Perfect broadside. had time to get my phone out and film him for a while, filmed him on the camera. Like, he was there forever, you know? So it can work both ways, you know? If you're banking on there being better stuff there and you don't have cams, it's better to just not know at all, you know, like kind of you did. But I was banking on all those bucks showing back up, and I passed the biggest, oldest deer on the farm that year because I'm thinking that there's other stuff. And then when I had that encounter, I hung some cams after that, you know. And I was like, well, I might as well get some cams up on these scrapes, and nothing showed besides him, you know. And then I had already passed him at that point, so I'm like, do you shoot him now? Like, you can't shoot him now, you know. Well,
there's pros and cons to both, man. And I think, like, the hunting industry in general is so polarized in that, like, you either got to do it this way or do it this way. Like, run cams, pattern a single buck, hunt him, or go in deep on public with no knowledge. Like, dude, just do what, one, do what works for you, and two, like, do what makes you happy.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
And that's one thing this year that was really enjoyable for me. It was just like, I got to go out to Ohio with my dad. We got a lease out there, and we took literally a 1-day trip. We went out to the lease. We drove out 6.5 hours to hunt for 1 day and drive back. I got to, you know, share my buck with him. He killed one opening day on a different farm, and I got to share that with him. And like I said, like, this year was different from past years and like my preparation for it, my mindset going into it. And I'm not going to say next year I won't try to find a single buck and run 100 cameras, but it's going to be like what feels right. And that might change. And I think people get so sucked into like, I got to be this or I got to be that. Hey, you don't, man. Like, just go hunt.
Yeah.
And if that to you is like, yeah.
It's okay to change too. Like, if you have a year like you did where, man, I got a lot of shit going on, I'm not able to get out there as much as I want. I know some guys are like, well, I'm just not going to hunt. Like, don't do that. It's okay to not be as prepared as other guys. It's, you know, it's okay to not run 30 trail cameras. It's okay to, you know, to just go out and hunt and see what happens. Like, a lot of guys would be like, well, I don't want to waste my time. I don't know what's out there. Sometimes that's fun. Like, I did that a lot this year, waiting on bucks to show up, you know. And was it a waste of time? A lot of time? Probably. But there's a difference in running cams and not having bucks there and not running cams and not knowing what's there. There's a difference on that because you kind of know that you're not going to see any bucks. So when you go out there, you're kind of hoping something gets chased through there through in the rut, you know.
Well, and like back on the cell cam thing, like my cell cams, they're awesome. But, like, there is no argument, no more deflating feeling than, like, when you think you're on a buck and you're running a bunch of cell cams and, like, you get in the stand and you're like, I'm in the spot. And then your cell cam goes off, like, 1.5 miles down the farm and he's on that camera. And you're like, well, might as well just climb down. Mm-hmm. Like, what fun is that?
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah, there's definitely something to that is, you know, I think it's great. They're great for, I know a lot of people try to say most recent information, recent information. And I think that works for about 2 weeks out of the whole entire season where you can actually get that info and go and, you know, attack that deer. I see a lot of posts about people killing deer with their mobile cam, got a picture of them or whatever. But like, if you're strategically trying to hunt this deer, 4th week of October, 1st week of November, 2nd week of November, 3rd week of November, those cell cams let you know that he's there. But you're not going to be able to be like, oh, I got a picture of him here and go hunt that and have a really good idea of like he's probably going to still be here. Unless he's with the doe or something crazy. But like if you get something on a scrape and 2nd week of October, yeah, there's a real good chance you're in the right area. You know, you're on that deer. But I feel people like you said, they missed the boat. They're hunting those cell cams later into the year instead of just using them to let them know that the deer is still alive, for one. And for two, they're letting it kind of as an inventory to deer of what deer are showing up and looking at the historical data of those deer, where he was, you know, last year, this time. Did he use this pinch? Did he not use this pinch on trail camera? And then kind of going from that instead of trying to use those cell cams for the day-to-day deciding where you're hunting. I think that's a bad misinterpretation of how to utilize those cameras.
Well, and at the end of the day, like I 100% believe that you can pattern a deer. Like,
oh yeah,
if he's hitting this scrape on low pressure days with a west wind, like, and he's there every single one, yeah, you probably have a higher percentage chance of killing that deer if you go in on a west wind on a low pressure day. But like I said, at the end of the day, it's a deer. Like,
yeah, I mean, a coyote can come in there, bump him out. You know, another guy could walk the property line and bump him. There's a lot of different things that could happen.
And what's that deer have better to do? Like,
yeah,
he's a deer. He's going to walk, feed. If he wants to walk this way one day for no apparent reason, he's going to do it. And you could be in there on the perfect pattern day, and he's not there. And that's, yep, like, that's hunting.
I had a buddy of mine a couple years ago. You know, he was talking to me about a property, and he's like, man, there's just not, you know, the bucks are in here, but I just can't find the trail. You know, there's no real good trail. So I'm like, there probably is no main trails. That's low deer population. You got a big deer in there. That deer just goes wherever he wants to. It's a wild animal. People think like they got a line out of their bedding. Well, he hits this trail, then he whys here, and he goes. If you watch a buck in the woods, there ain't no pattern to how he walks. You know, people are thinking that they're a prey animal, but they're not walking in a straight line. They're walking over here, browsing a little bit. Now they're over here, browsing. Then they're over there. Like, they're strategic, but not as much as people think that they're on the exact trail and going through an area, you know?
Deer are so complex and smart, but at the same time, it's a deer.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times we overcomplicate it.
Yeah, that's what I catch myself doing that all the time. Like,
oh, it's easy to do.
I'm always like, why would he be here? It makes no sense. Why? And I'm trying to like talk myself out of hunting there because it doesn't make sense for why this buck would be there. But I know he's in there somewhere, you know. But in my mind, I'm like, it doesn't make sense from other deer that I've hunted and what everybody says on podcasts or whatever. You know, the stuff that I read, why is this deer here? It doesn't make sense for him to be living in this tiny little block or whatever. You know, there's pressure here. It doesn't make sense. But then he's there, you know, and then you hunt him and you see him. You're like, oh, shit, I'm the greatest hunter alive. You know, but 2 hours later, you're guessing on your stand location. You know, you're like,
changes on a dime.
Yeah, you're like, I don't know about this spot, man. It kind of seems, you know, shit. I don't know why he would be here. And then, boom, he's there, you know. So it's a wild game. And no matter what you say, you can pattern deer, you can run cameras, you can be as prepared as shit, but I still think it's about, at minimum, it's 70% luck. Like, at minimal. That's for even the people that kill every single year. You have to have skill, but you got to get lucky, dude. You got to have a little luck out there to be able to get that buck up, moving, and you be right, not the wind squirrel. Like,
the 1911 is one of the most iconic firearms in history. Designed by John Browning, the 1911 was the standard-issue sidearm of the U.S. military from 1911 to 1985. While Colt produced the original, almost every major firearm company has produced its own version. It's wildly revered for its reliability, crisp trigger, and is still a favorite for all types of shooters. Whether you're looking to buy or build a 1911 and just about everything for guns, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
There's so many things that can go wrong that you just have to have a little luck on your side to nail it all out. So,
yep, Yeah, I mean, the skill comes in, you know, that moment of truth, the shot. And even then, there's things he is like, you don't see a small twig, you know, looking through your peep. Yeah. Or, you know, things happen. You get a broadhead malfunction, you get something that happens that you can't control.
Yeah, I always said a couple years ago, you know, I feel like the luck is getting them to 60. Like, you can get lucky and get a deer to 60 a lot of times, but the skill is that last 60 yards. Like, picking the right tree, making the shot, calling at him when he needs to be called to, not calling out a deer that don't need to be called to. That's, like, skill and time and situations. But I feel like getting them 60, 70 yards, sometimes you just need a little luck to see that buck at 60, 70. But then closing the deal after that encounter is a lot more skill than luck, in my opinion. Like, that's where the picking the location for how he's going to work through with the thermals or the wind, all that skill comes in within that last 100 yards when that deer is close to you. I feel like that's probably 95, you know, percent skill and 5% luck a lot of times, where the shit's got to be on the money for it to work, because he might get 40 and win you. He might get 40, but you still ain't got a shooting lane there. There's a lot of planning. And like I said, that's just being in that situation, you know, getting used to being in that kill mode. And I can't remember who said it. It might have been Cameron Haynes I heard say one time. He was like, if you haven't been in the situation of killing deer where you're drawn back on or an animal, you're not going to be good at it. Like, it's just something that you have to – the only way to get good at that is to do it. You know, there's a lot of things you can practice, but you can't practice that. You just have to practice it by doing it. And that's what I was trying to tell my oldest boy. Like, we can shoot this 3D foam target as much as we want, but you can't practice drawing back and shooting on a live deer with the emotions and the adrenaline that you're feeling and the wind and, you know, the cold elements and everything you got going on in that moment without being in that moment. There's no other way to do it.
So. No, and like, even still, like, you know, tell myself, like, every time I shoot, like, all right, watch the last spot, you know, make sure you mark where he was standing when you shot him, you know, mark a tree that he ran past before you lost sight. And even still, like, people ask me afterwards, like, okay, where did he go? I'm like, I don't know, I blacked out.
Yeah, like I'm complete. Good for the shot, and then I'm like, he went that way. But then you go try to find the blood, and you're like, man, maybe he didn't go this way, you know?
50 yards to the left. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And as many deer as I've killed, like does, bucks, out of state, like all different situations, and like, I consider myself somebody who has gotten the opportunity to shoot at a lot of deer. Like, I still black out. And that, honestly, like, who's that? Like, I don't want to do it anymore. Like, that's what's fun for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's something about being in a tree stand and looking at the ground and then being on the ground. It's like a different world. Yes. It's a completely different world when you're down on the ground. You're like, man, it's kind of shit. Like, it looks good from the tree, and then you get down there, and you're like, man, this don't look as good as it did from up there, like, where you're shot. You're like, I shot him over here, and you
like,
get down.
You look back up, and you're like, how did I get an arrow?
Yeah, you're like, you're looking up, you're like, man, that does not look like a good setup, you know? Or was he standing here, or maybe he was over here? And then where you shoot him, and you look back at your stand, you're like, there's no way he was standing here. But a lot of times, you know, you're like, well, blood's right here. He had to be standing here. But that... like you said, that just goes back to just time doing it. And that, like you said, that's something that you've had a lot of chances to do is kill not only deer, but really, really nice, you know, class deer. So over the last 7 years, you know, everybody strives for success and then they want success year after year. What do you think that you're doing that a lot of other guys might not be doing out there that's, you know, getting you to be successful every year?
Oh boy. It's just like a couple years, honestly, it's just been following my gut. Like, if I'm in a stand and I feel like, okay, I'm in the spot, like, I want to sit there. The last couple years since I've gotten a little bit more into like the mobile hunting thing, and like, there's times that I'm up in the stand for like an hour after I hang the stand and I'm like, this isn't it. Like, it's not going to happen here. I'll climb down and move to where I feel like it is. And I think that's one thing that that's allowed, the mobile hunting game has allowed me to do is just go with my gut a little bit more. You know, obviously taking into consideration food and bedding and, you know, all that fun stuff, but really just kind of like following my gut. And I think a lot of guys get stuck in like, well, I already have the stand hung, so I'm just going to sit it out.
Yeah. I've
been and then there. I get to the end of the night and you kick yourself and you're like, I should have just moved.
Yeah.
Like, even if it's moving for like the last hour, like if you haven't seen anything for the first 3 hours of the hunt, like get down and move. Even if you don't get to set back, like set up again, like figure out your spot for the next day. And most of the deer that I've killed the last couple of years have been in situations where I've either moved or I made a move based on something that I saw prior in the week or the day before. So just staying mobile. And I don't think that that's anything groundbreaking or new. You know, it's, especially with how big the mobile game has gotten.
I think it is, because, I mean, saying that you're going in there and moving, I mean, that's hard to do. Like, you're getting set up. And a lot of times when you go in, I'm sure this happens to most people, not just me. A lot of times when you go in on a morning hunt and you set up in the dark, you know, and you get past that first hour and a half of dark or light and you're like, this isn't it. Like, my shooting isn't good.
Yep.
I seen bucks up on this ridge. I probably need to be up there. And you don't move because you're worried about missing that time of, you know, I got to get down, hang my stuff, and move, you know, and I might get busted or a buck's going to come in while I'm doing that. And that's a hard thing to do, but I feel like that is when that is key. Like, especially if you're in a new area, like you go into some public land, you set up, you know, and, well, the does are moving 80 yards over there. Like, there's a reason they moved over there, so you probably should move there. But it's a lot easier said than to actually do.
Well, it's mental. That's mentally tough. Like, the last thing you want to do on a cold morning is that the, like, your hands are cold. The last thing you want to do is pull the set that you took time to hang. You got up earlier to go hang and pull it down to move 50 yards to hang it again and sit after, like, what people consider, like, prime movement time.
Yeah.
Like, nobody wants to do that. And a lot of times in your head, you're like, oh, I saw all those deer, you know, 80 yards over. I could move over. But maybe that buck that I'm after, he'll do something different.
Yeah.
You're trying, it only takes one or two times that, like, he does what all the other deer do where you're like, okay, like, next time I think about it or see a deer do something, like, just get down and move.
Yeah, we did that. It's a couple years ago. We were on public, and we had just encountered our target buck in this bottom draw, and it was real cold, and we went in there in the morning again, and the does that this buck was on, they kind of J-hooked in their bedding different. And we were like, oh, man, we probably should move up there where those does came through, because that's what this buck's been on, you know? And then we seen a pretty solid buck. Couldn't tell if it was a shooter, pretty far away where those does worked through and came through. And we're like, okay, now we should really go through the up there. And we didn't move because we were like, oh, he was here 2 days ago, you know, working this bench with these does. And 30 minutes later, there's another buck up there, you know, and we're like, gosh, dang. Like, and it would have been a pretty good move. But then you're at the point like, okay, it's 9:30 now. And then you're telling yourself like, okay, I missed my opportunity. I can't go up there and move. I'm going to set to 10:30, 11. And believe it or not, there's another freaking buck that went up there through that draw. And we kicked ourselves in the ass all the way out that day. Because we knew, but it was, like you said, it was cold. We were set up. We had seen some small bucks moving through. And you're in that mindset of, I need to move. Well, I don't want to miss the movement. And then you wait so long. Then you're like, well, now it's too late. But in actuality, it's not. Like, if that's where you, like you said, you need to go with your gut, which is so hard to do. Like, a lot of times, even with properties with me, a lot of times I'm like, I know this buck isn't there. I can just feel that he's not there, but you're like, well, maybe he's in this draw, and you hunt it and he's not there. And then you're like, I knew he wasn't there. And then you're like, well, maybe he's in this draw. I'm going to hang a camera, and you don't get any pictures of him. You know, like, there's something about your instincts to kind of know that buck isn't there. You know, you're out there, you're not seeing the sign you're supposed to, and you're like, well, maybe he's not, you know, maybe he's moved over a little bit. But a lot of times he's just not there.
Well, and this is just me, but I know personally, mentally, I would rather move or make a move that I think I need to and be wrong, then sit it out, see what happens. Because if I don't move, whether good happens or not, if nothing happens, I'm going to kick myself. If I make the move and nothing happens, I'm like, you know what? I gave it a shot.
Yeah, you like, put the effort in. You're like, okay, I put the effort in. You know, it wasn't what I thought, but at least I don't have to second guess myself of what if I would have moved up there, you know? I like that. Yeah, I like that style. I need to add that a little bit more because there's sometimes when you're sitting there and you just know this shit ain't right. You know, maybe you get winded by a doe or something. You're like, nah, this shit ain't right, you know? And you just try to force it, you know?
And there's no cookie cutter answer for everybody. And I think that's what a lot of guys get caught up in is like, oh, well, this worked for, say, a Jake Bush or whoever, Mark Drury. Like, that doesn't mean it's going to work for you. At the end of the day, you have to be in the stand to kill deer. And to want to be in the stand, you got to do what works for you and what's fun for you. Like, if fun for you is ground hunting, moving nonstop, still hunting, calling, like, do that. Because that's going to get you in the woods more. If it for you is sitting on a box blind over a food plot, like, and that's what's going to get you in the woods, man, do that. Like, just go out and have fun and enjoy it. And you're probably going to be more successful because you're going to be out.
Yeah, that's great advice. People try to do, you know, okay, you know, the jury's having a lot of people having success on food plots and they got a property. All right, I'm going to start running food plots. But the property doesn't set up well for food plots. The access is hard. The wind's not correct all the time, you know, and they're trying to force it to happen. Maybe the ground isn't good for growing. Maybe you can't get corn, beans, or shit to grow there without, you know, a bunch of lime or fertilizer or something. And you're trying, then you're just getting frustrated. But just like you said, sometimes you hear someone talk about a hub scrape. Oh, you find a hub scrape. Well, maybe you just ain't worth a shit at hunting hub scrapes because you haven't done it enough.
Yep.
But you're really good at hunting, you know, bedding areas, or you're really good at hunting the downwind side of doe bedding, or you had a lot of success in pinch points, but you forced that hub scrape because this guy was successful on it. So you got to be successful, but you haven't hunted it enough to know how these deer are using it. Then you miss opportunities maybe on your food plot where you've had success in the past trying to force it on this hub scrape or vice versa. You plant this food plot, doesn't grow as good. It's kind of shitty. Not a lot of deer using it. But you're like, well, I'm going to hunt the food plot because I put all this work and time in planting it, but there's nothing accessing it or using it. So you're kind of wasting your time there when you should be on the hub scrape. Like it's just like you said there, you can listen to 1,000 different people, but you got to find out what you're good at and just do that until it stops working, you know? So
yeah, and I feel like I think it comes like you have to define what success is for you. Like if to be successful after a season, that means that you have to kill a giant buck. Okay, then maybe you need to hunt like you're good at hunting to kill that buck. If success to you is at the end of the year saying, you know what, I want to get better at hunting a hub scrape, like I want to learn to do that, you have to be okay with, okay, like maybe I won't shoot a giant buck this year because I have no idea how to hunt a hub scrape or how to find one, and commit your season to learning it if that's what you want to do. But you have to define what success is to you. Otherwise, you're going to be disappointed.
And that's a great point, too. You know, it's there's a lot of people that are changing their gear every year. You know, their setups, stands. Maybe they're going to saddle. They're going to, you know, a different bow. And sometimes it's just like what works for you, it's cool to change. But if you're struggling with what you got now, maybe you should go back to what you had, you know? And I'm kind of
I did that with the saddle. Like, whole saddle setup in general isn't cheap, but it was the fad thing. It was the cool thing. And I was like, I want to get into saddle hunting. Dude, I hunted with it for, like, half of a year. And I was like, nope, it's not working for me. I don't like it. Like, I went back to just, like, my mobile running gun setup with my stand and my sticks. And, like, one, it was more fun for me. Like, I dreaded going out in the saddle, but I wanted to force myself to do it because I thought, like, that was the thing.
Yeah.
And I just sold it. Like, I didn't like it. Some guys love it. My best friend loves it.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, some people get stuck on man, this guy is doing it. I need to do it. That's how he's killing bucks. That's what I'm going to do to be able to kill bucks. And they just don't like it. And they just force it. And then they end up not enjoying hunting, you know, and they're just trying to make this thing work. When if you just went back, maybe you want to try mobile hunting, but you're not real good at it. You're still learning, but you got a damn ladder stand you killed out of 5 years. Like, I know it's a ladder stand, but man, there's something going on at that ladder stand. Maybe you should hunt that ladder stand on a good, you know, it's a good spot. Like, it works for you. And I still have those spots. Like, I mobile hunt 75% of the time, but I still have those stands where if you need to be there, that's the spot. Like, that's why there's a stand there, you know? So I feel like some people just get so wrapped up in it, you know, and like what you're saying about, you know, where you need to be. I did that this year. Like, I knew I needed to be in this pinch. Like, I knew there, if there's going to be a buck come through there, it's always early, late October, early November. We had that cold front, and I was like, there's going to be deer going through that freaking pinch. I just need to get in there. But my mind was on another buck, and I was so dead set on trying to find him and hunt him down that I missed multiple opportunities on really good deer. And then by the time I finally got fed up and moved to that pinch, it was too late. You know, I was like, I just kicked myself in the ass. I'm like, day late. I'm a day late. And we had that cold morning, November 2nd. And I was like, there is going to be a magnum come through that. I know there is. Boom. Frosty morning, big ass 9-pointer, giant brows come right. Never seen the deer come right through that pinch. And I was just like, in the stand, you get the notification. You're like, I knew that that's where I needed to be. But it's a spot you can't shoot more than 35 yards, 40 yards. You're like, you can't see very far. You're thinking, well, this buck, I'm on a completely different buck that I want to kill, you know. But what do? You go in there. If I would have went there and didn't see anything, I still wouldn't have been any closer to killing that buck because I never found him anyways, you know. Yep. So sometimes if you know where you need to go, you just got to go there. It's hard to do, though, sometimes. It seems silly to say it's hard to do, but
it is, though.
You got this stand, this property, this stand. You can go over here. You can hunt this buck. And sometimes having all those options are hard. That's why.
Too much almost.
Yeah. Over the last few years, I stopped kind of hunting one buck and just kind of hunting shooters, you know, which you can be successful. But at least when you hunt one buck, if you don't see a shooter, you're like, okay, cool. Like, I know where my standards are. I'm cool with not shooting anything else except this buck. So if I don't see any other deer, I'm cool with it. But when you're just trying to kill a good buck and you're not seeing any bucks, you're like, damn, I'm terrible at this.
Deflating.
Yeah.
Why do I do this?
Yeah. I'm like, you know, and then even if you're kind of hunting a whole bunch of different bucks, you still kind of pick out one or two that you really want to focus on anyways.
Yeah, you have your list.
So, you know, you're still running all these cams on all these other bucks, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's just so much simpler just to kind of be like, all right, this is my guy or this is my two bucks I'm going to try to focus on. I'm going to throw my shit at them. If it sticks, great. If it don't, oh well. And that's kind of what I'm going to do next year. Like, I'm going to go in and just hunt a couple bucks, keep it simple, and try to spread myself so thin and so many different bucks and not going with my gut and going where I know that I should be, and then getting the damn, like you said, that's nothing worse than getting a cell cam pick. You're like, man, I'm dumb. Like, I knew I was supposed to be there. But
I think you summed it up, man. Like, keep it simple. Like, define what your success is and have fun trying to chase it.
Yeah.
Like, if you killed something every single sit that you went out, it would lose what it is to us.
Yeah,
like,
it would.
Remember why you started. Remember what you defined as success for that year, and just go chase it, however that looks for you.
I know there's a lot of people out there that listen to this that are trying to kill that first big buck, or maybe they killed a good buck, and now they're trying to kill that really good buck, you know? And I miss those years, dude. I miss that desire and just absolute the fire that you had just to try to kill. You're like, oh, I'm gonna kill a really good buck this year, you know, like that first one, man. Those were some. I know the people that are in it are like kicking rocks right now because they're probably struggling, learning, but they don't realize how good how good those hunts are when they come together, because, you know, those first giant bucks are just, they just mean so much, you know.
Agreed. And it's something that, like, when you look back, like, I remember what camo I was wearing. Oh, yeah. I remember what arrow I had knocked. Like, it's
not that they,
deer hunts just special, man.
Not that they lose their luster, you know, of like, oh, you killed a good buck, but there's just something about like those first three or four good bucks that are on the wall that really resonate with me. And then after that, it's like, oh, another good deer, you know, another good deer. But it's just, it ain't the same. And when I killed that absolute giant, that's what you're kind of faced with now. You're like, all right, I kill another mega, then I'll get that feeling again. And it's hard to find the megas, dude. It's hard. If you do find them, it's extremely hard to kill them. And that's so downplayed. Like, I mentioned that on a couple podcasts ago. Like, how many guys out there, if you took 100% percentage, actually killed a buck over 150 with a bow? Like, it's a small percentage of all hunters, you know, 5-6% maybe, you know, that killed a buck this year, 150 or better, you know, with a bow. Like, but you get on social, it looks like everybody's done it. You know, it's just, you're seeing the best of the, you know, you share, everybody's sharing what they're shooting, but all the guys that ain't killed shit ain't sharing nothing. So,
yep. That's what you just, like I said, it's that you got to stay in your lane and remember why you're doing it, yeah. not other people.
Yep. I did a whole podcast on that. I mean, I'm out there trying to kill deer for content and killing deer that, you know, I was happy with, but not the deer that I actually wanted. And this year I didn't do that. And like I said, I passed that buck Frank. In years past, I would have shot the shit out of that deer, dude. You know, and now sitting here, you know, thinking about it, you're like, I would have shot that deer, got content, but I wouldn't have been like sitting here jacked of the year. You know, you killed a mature deer, great, but you wouldn't be sitting here like, man, this is a hell of a year. Like, this is a good ass year. You'd be sitting here like, yep, killed another buck, you know? So I'm looking for that at the end of the season. You're sitting there like, man, I smashed it this year. Like, that's what I'm looking for. And you got to figure out what, like you said, you got to figure out what your standards are and what will make you say, I smashed it this year. You know, and not waver from that. So,
yeah, you gotta stick to your guns.
Yeah, well, I really enjoyed this whitetail, just kind of a whitetail chat, dude. This was fun, man. I appreciate
it's kind
you
of
coming
a BS
on.
Session,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I really I like the BS sessions most of the time the best, anyways, because it's like I said, a lot of the strategy's gone. There is some late season strategy, but everybody knows what to do late season. It's pretty basic, generic stuff. And I feel like this is what a lot of people are probably thinking the same thing we are, just haven't had a guy to talk to them about it, you know? So hopefully they're relating along and be like, yeah, you know, that's what I need to do. Or, you know, try to get some guster from next year to rope it back in and send it for the 2024 season.
No, man, any time you need to talk whitetails, give me a ring. I'm always down to talk about it.
All right, brother. Well, I appreciate your time, dude. Well, it don't get much better than that right there. Just a genuine BS whitetail podcast over here, the late season. I absolutely love these kind of shows where we're just in there just jiving back and forth like a conversation we're having out in the garage over some beers. Appreciate you guys tuning in all the way to the end. Hopefully this got the wheels turning a little bit, got you thinking about deer. I am going to be doing the bucks of 2023, and I'm going to be doing it kind of a different way. I'm going to be doing some Midwest bucks, some Eastern bucks, and some Southern bucks, trying to hit each individual state for a buck story, and then kind of seeing at the end if any of them coincide, any similarities from the East to the West. So if you have a buck that you shot last year, big deer, that you want to talk about, reach out. And I'm looking to get some just regular guys that haven't been on a podcast, maybe been on one, don't matter. But just no-name guys just on here chatting about deer, about the buck that they killed in 2023. And it's going to be the Midwest bucks of 2023, the East Coast bucks of 2023, and the Southern bucks of 2023. Might do 10 episodes a piece. I'm not exactly sure on how I want to run this series, but you guys know I'm a big series guy. So if you're in one of the states that I mentioned, you know, anything on the East Coast, South, or Midwest, reach out. Let's chat about your buck, man. I'm excited to get some new guys on the show and listen to your story listen to the success and motivate others to be successful next year. Like always, love you guys. Appreciate you tuning in all the way to the end. You support me so much in so many different ways. I'm growing with you and you're growing with me. My family's growing. I really appreciate all you guys supporting me over the years and over the weeks of listening to this show. I know a lot of people say that and don't really mean it, but I truly, truly mean it, and I really appreciate you guys. Love all the messages I've been getting here lately, talking about the show and the route that I'm going with, trying to motivate people not only in hunting but in life and dad and fitness and health, and I'm going to keep going that route. That's what my heart is drawing me, and that's the way that I'm going to go, and hopefully you guys are enjoying it. Like always, try to do the right thing, try to leave a legacy, and Whitetail Legacy is out.
A life that has the stories to back it, a life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby, 6'8" Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Through the Blackwater Bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinners crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
You go out there and the fish are where you think they are, any one of these casts could be the bite. It's the most exciting fishing that I know right here at Hawk's Cave.
Oh, that's awesome.
Experience the best saltwater fishing the world has to offer. Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.